Hey, Cracked fans. With the summer months just around the corner, we know all of you are beginning to think about how you can best maximize your chances to improve your game with the warm weather. Well, thankfully, we here at Cracked Rackets are so excited to tell all of you about the 254 tennis camp happening this summer at Baylor University. Now, over the course of 3 weeks in June, starting June 12th through the 16th and ending June 26th through the 30th, you'll have the opportunity to learn from some of the best coaches in the business in an all-encompassing tennis experience. You'll have the opportunity to improve each and every part of your game, whether that be on the singles court, whether that be on the doubles court, through drilling, through point play, match play as well. You'll also, of course, receive a free t-shirt for participating in the camp, but also have the chance to see yourself broadcasted as our Cracked Rackets team will be providing coverage of the final day each week at this 254 tennis camp. Again, you'll have the opportunity to learn from some of the best coaches in the business. I promise Coach Michael Woodson and the Baylor team going to make it an extraordinarily enjoyable time. How can you get signed up today? Well, you can learn more information by visiting the Baylor website by going to baylor.edu/athletics/tenniscamp. Again, that's baylor.edu/athletics/tenniscamp to sign up today. Now, this camp open to any and all entrants, but limited only by age, number, grade level, and or gender. Again, you can learn more about this camp by going to baylor.edu/athletics/tenniscamp today. Don't miss out, folks. Going to be three very exciting, fun weeks of tennis down at Baylor University. Be sure to sign up for the 254 tennis camp happening at Baylor today. Welcome to the Mini Break, your daily podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Thursday, May 19th. On today's show, we continue our preview of the 2022 French Open, the year's second Grand Slam, beginning next week. As such, plenty of for us to get excited about as tennis fans. Of course, this weekend, also the conclusion of the 2022 college tennis season. If you're looking for coverage for that event, hop on over to our Great Shot podcast feed. We've previewed both the men's and women's quarterfinals. We'll recap all the action as it unfolds in Champaign, preview each round before each day's play as well. Of course, I am so fortunate to be on the broadcast for the semifinals onwards, and you can follow all of that coverage over on the Tennis One app. But again, if you're looking for coverage of the last week of the college tennis season, the Great Shot podcast is the place for you. Of course, as we've been doing all week here on today's show, we're going to continue our preview of the 2022 French Open, and we've already broken down our dark horses. We've already broken down our contenders. Now, the draws come out here today, but we are recording this podcast Wednesday night. One last topic for us to preview before we look at the draws and get ready for the 2022 French Open to begin. That, of course, is a look at a group of players near and dear to our heart here at Cracked Rackets, a group we focus at routinely throughout the course of the year. That, of course, is the Americans. And as an American, it was following American men's and women's tennis that got me into the sport, and right now is a fascinating time in American men's tennis. Obviously, I believe it's, what, six or seven American men going to be seated at the 2022 French Open. This next generation of players from Fritz all the way through to Jensen Brooksby ascending towards the top of the ATP rankings. Of course, there's a phenomenal depth in American men's tennis as well. On the women's side, if not Iga Swiatek, it could be just about anyone. And I believe there are a couple of Americans we can all circle on that women's side to make those potentially deep runs, perhaps even threaten Iga. If someone's going to do it, I believe there are a couple of Americans who may be best positioned to do so. But with that in mind, well, you hear him in the background already. With that in mind, we got plenty to debate and discuss on today's show. And of course, if you're going to have those sorts of debates and discussions, you better bring on a fun guest to do it with. And thankfully, that is precisely what we have here on today's show. Joining us once again on the podcast, making his long-awaited return, is a returning champion here on our Cracked Racket shows, a writer you know best from his work, whether it be on the All About Tennis blog for our website, crackedrackets.com. You may know his betting work. He's written just about everywhere. That's because he's one of the best in the business, folks. Friends of the program, David Gertler. Welcome back to the show. How are you
doing? That is some introduction. Thank you so much.
It is always a pleasure to have you back. All is well with you. You're safe. You're healthy.
I am safe. I am healthy. I got norovirus a couple weeks ago. That was horrible.
Yeah. Look at us. We're all dealing with corona still. You've moved on to the next big thing.
Yeah, I don't know which one's worse, because the way I was feeling that day, woo.
Yes, well, we are happy you are doing well. We are happy to have you back. And look, whenever I have the chance to talk to you, I feel like there are a million different directions we can go into. I do want to ask you one big picture question before we get into the Americans, because so much is always made about this open era of tennis we're seeing, particularly on the women's side. It feels like we've been in this stretch for about 4 years now where there's no definitive number one singles player. You can probably draw that line all the way back to Serena, you know, making her return from pregnancy on court, just hasn't been back with the frequency of dominance that she had prior to that moment. And as such, we've seen multiple Grand Slam champions emerge over the past few seasons on the women's side. On the men's side, of course, you still have the big three, in particular Rafa, Djokovic, doing their thing. But this season, David, we have simultaneous ascensions occurring for two players who I think are now marked as the two stars to watch here in this next decade of professional tennis. Of course, on the women's side, I'm referring to 37-3 Iga Swiatek. On the men's side, Carlos Alcaraz, the now 19-year-old, beating Djokovic, Nadal on his way to another Masters 1000 title. Of course, he's won two of them here in this 2022 season. What do you make of each player's ascension? Where are you with each? Let's start with Iga.
All right, with Iga. I mean, what can we say? Five straight tournament wins, right?
28 consecutive victories. 28 consecutive.
And she's not even losing sets or really even games in sets. It's crazy stuff. With that said, I just have a funny feeling about Paris. There's something about a major that brings on, we see it in qualifying this week, that brings on extra pressure. And all these wins, it's all nice and all, but Collins still beat her at the Australian Open. And I believe she beat her pretty badly. And so I just feel like, yes, of course, we ought to, excuse me for the pronunciation, is on fire right now. I mean, the serve is hitting its spots. That forehand is the best shot in women's tennis right now. The backhand has improved infinitely. It's so much more solid. She moves so well, especially on clay, the way that she moves on clay, her variety. I could go on and on. I'm probably saying the same things I'll say about Alcaraz coming up too, but I am so impressed. So I don't want to poop on her and say, oh, you know, the French Open, it's, you know, it's not happening. Cause of course I don't see anyone in the draw that can beat her. But then again, I didn't think that Stachowski would be better. And I didn't think that Lucas Rousseau would beat Nadal, you know, at Wimbledon, you know, but, or Soderling at beating it all at the French Open. Things can happen, and I want to see the draw first. I do think if I had to pick one player that can beat her, it's an American.
Interesting, and I think we're going to have the same American. So that's where you're at with Iga. Here's my thing. I've said it on a couple of podcasts. From a numbers perspective, A, she's breaking serve, David, 56% of the time.
Crazy.
That's ridiculous. That's historic. If she finishes the season with that mark, that's the best season in WTA history from a returning perspective. The eye test matches up with those numbers. I mean, again, unless you have a Naomi Osaka or an Aryna Sabalenka on the right day serve, and even then, she is still not easy to break down that forehand return, and her backhand return is probably the best return right now in women's tennis. She's so comfortable on the slide, moves exceptionally well. Her first step, so quick, so powerful. I mean, again, There's no discernible weakness for Iga Swiatek. And mathematically, 37-3, 7-1 against the top 10, 5 titles in 8 events, 5 finals in 8 events. She, you know, a Grand Slam semifinal in her first run. She's on pace to have one of those Navratilova, Graf, Everett, Seles, Serena-type seasons. She needs the Grand Slam titles to be on that level. Absolutely. But she has done everything else to this point. And we don't see that very frequently. And so that's, of course, where we're at with Swiatek. Let me ask it like this to you. If Carlos Alcaraz does not make the semifinals of this tournament, not even win the French Open, but if he doesn't make the semifinals, David, did something go horribly wrong? Like, I feel like I am that confident in him at this point as well.
I know. But I'm like, in my head, I'm like, when you initially asked that, I'm like, yes, something's wrong. And then I'm thinking to myself, well, he's only 19 years old. And do we want to put all this pressure on him? Not that he's listening, but you know. Yeah.
My thing is, on that pressure note, and I talked about this with Gil Gross on yesterday's show, allow fans to be excited. That's the fun of being a tennis fan, is the imagination that comes in this sort of moment where we have two future prospects who we have not had on this level, with all due respect to Kenin and Barty and, you know, all Andreescu flirted with this, certainly Raducanu flirted with this momentarily, but you know, on the men's side, Zverev was really good. Tsitsipas was a little bit older. He was really good. We haven't had a men's or women's prospect on this sort of transcendent level since young Rafa, young Djokovic, young Andy on the men's side. On the women's side, I mean, Wozniacki flirted with this level, but the difference being Swiatek already has a slam title. We just don't see this very frequently.
Yeah, I mean, Alcaraz at forehand, top 3 shot on the, you know.
I'm so happy you brought this up, David, and you and I think similarly in this sense, and you'll actually entertain this hypothetical. You think you're going to play more than 50 hours of tennis in your life the rest of the way?
Absolutely.
Probably I certainly hope so. Yeah, I certainly hope so. With that in mind, would you give up the last 50 hours of your life to have Alcaraz's drop shot for the remainder of it?
Yes.
Like, it's not even a question. Like, I couldn't agree with you more, because the amount of enjoyment I would get out of being able to execute that shot for the remainder of my life is worth giving up those last 50 hours. I agree with you. And to the Alcaraz question, because I think you're one of the great tennis minds of our generation.
Oh, don't say that.
Well, look, it's not a high bar to clear. But what's the weakness? Like, how do you attack Carlos Alcaraz? It used to be attack the second serve. You look at the stats leaderboard right now amongst players here in 2022. Carlos Alcaraz, second serve win percentage. I mean, is it outstanding for Alcaraz? No. But you look for Carlos Alcaraz again, amongst top 50 players, his second serve win percentage right now, I lied, it is outstanding. It's 13th, David. 13th. He's 13th best at the second serve. Like, yeah, you say that about everyone. His second serve is no longer discernibly attackable.
It's unbelievable. And what he does is he pushes you back with that forehand, and then he hits that perfect drop shot.
Well,
and
his ability, sorry to cut you off, but we can be conversational here. This is why I love having you back. It's not even that. It's on the ad side, he is guaranteed to find a forehand. I don't care if it's a first serve or a second serve, his first ball is going to be a forehand. And for lack of a better term, when his first ball is a forehand, you're f***ed. Like, it's just, you lose.
It's, you know, and the thing is, like, I would be, you know, I'm a little saying best of 5. We haven't seen it. But then again, I think back to Barcelona when when he played that 3.5 hour match and then went right back and crushed PCB afterwards. It's like, how can I, you know, and the same thing in Madrid, that brutal match against Djokovic, and then, you know, and Nadal the day before. And then, of course, you know, Zverev had the scheduling issues. I agree with him on that front, but still, Alcaraz looked fresh as a daisy for that final.
No, he's exceptional. He really is. And yeah, to beat Djokovic on a bum ankle, like, it's a testament to his skill set. With that in mind, I'll sneak this in at the beginning so I don't have to ask you at the end. Who are you picking right now to win the titles?
I want to spot, well, on the men's side, I want to see the draw. On the women's side, it's easy. It's like, if you don't pick Swiatek, then
you're trying to be
cute.
Understand
with the reasoning.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's very, very difficult to pick anyone.
She might lose. You can't pick it.
I totally understand why you are waiting for the men's draw to come out, and I'm going to allow you to do that. I'm going to get you out of that answer.
But hold on.
Okay.
I'll give a prediction. Okay. Yeah. Djokovic. I think in best of five, he would have beaten Alcaraz in Madrid. I still think that. I don't know
about that, but I think he would have beaten Alcaraz best of five in Rome because he was a different player physically. Like, and we saw what we needed to see. It was so eerily reminiscent of last season. I think all the smart people are picking Djokovic now because we've just seen the flashes we need to see, and Rafa's not healthy yet. With that in mind, though, our topic today is the Americans. And of course, before we get into that, a shout out as always to our friends at Tennis Point for providing the latest and greatest equipment to so many Americans, but countless tennis players across the globe. And look, for the greatest deals at the greatest prices, there's one place to go, tennis-point.com. They'll help you find what you're looking for. You use our promo code CR15 on checkout, you'll get 15% off your order, free 2-day shipping on all orders exceeding $75. Best of all, a free can of Wilson Extra Duty tennis balls. Again, tennis-point, symbol, not the spelling, tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15. With that said, let's get into the Americans. And while the American men are more intriguing, the American women have the ability to play a bigger role in the storylines we see unfold over the next 2 weeks. And two American women I want to start with, David, are Danielle Collins and Amanda Anisimova.
Okay.
So in my Women's Contenders podcast with Gil Gross, I had both women in my list of the top five players most likely to beat Iga Swiatek and perhaps win the 2022 French Open title. Let's start with Danielle Collins. You look for Collins overall on the season. Obviously, the most, remarkable is the wrong word. The most significant is the word I was looking for. Result is the Australian Open run to the final, where, of course, she knocks off Swiatek, knocks off a Mertens, a Tosin, and, you know, ultimately gets knocked out in a very competitive 6-3, 7-6 final against Ashley Barty. Now, she has not been the healthiest since that moment, but you look at her matches she's actually lost. While the score lines have been dramatic, the losses to Osaka, Andreescu, Anisimova, and a loss to Vondrousova in a match where she got hurt and had to retire and was actually leading the match at the time where she was forced to retire. With that said, again, we got to see her play really good tennis in her victory over Simona Halep round one in Rome. And Danielle Collins also has the resume fact of beating Iga Swiatek in a significant Grand Slam match earlier this season. And there's an FU to Danielle Collins where she will, and it's an intangible quality, where she is not afraid of any opponent she's facing across the net. She believes she is as good as any player on the WTA Tour. You also look, again, analytically, there are six players right now in the women's game who rank top 20 in both hold and break percentage. Now, obviously, Iga's one of them, and she's top three in both hold and break percentage. But Danielle Collins is one of those six players as well. So the numbers say it, the eye tests say it. She's not the most match tough, but she will be a top 10 seed, David. I guess my question is, outside of Iga Swiatek, are you definitively picking anyone in a head-to-head matchup against Danielle Collins?
Yes. I'm picking Amanda Anisimova against Danielle.
Interesting.
Collins.
So Anisimova was two on my list. Collins was three. So we'll get to the Anisimova in a moment. Let's start with Collins because I think she's the more notable and prominent name here in this instance.
Yeah. So
how confident are you with her?
Something that interested or surprised me when I looked into her clay results is that she actually has a 68% career winning percentage on clay.
Yes, was very good on the clay last year in lieu of playing the Olympics.
Yep, she won Palermo last year, beat Roos in the final, I believe, got revenge for the whole drama in Hamburg. But her backhand is top five backhand on the WTA Tour, top three. She can just power right through opponents. And she has that attitude. She's not going to be scared of the moment. If she plays with Swiatek at the French Open, she, like you said, has struggled a little bit with injuries. And I know she's had health problems in the past couple of years. So you don't know for sure what version of Collins. You know, is it going to be the Collins that lost 6-2, 6-2 to Anisimova in Rome? Or is it going to be the one that beat Halep in straight sets in the round before? We don't really know, but that win over Halep told me she has the level to challenge and potentially be Swiatek in the right right conditions. I would have liked her more in altitude, like in Madrid, for instance, against Swiatek. But if Swiatek played Madrid, but I really am so the backhand and the forehand has improved too over the past year or two, I would say. Well, and her serve is great.
The thing Gil did a really good job of pointing out in our podcast was that if you're going to beat Iga, you got to take advantage of her second serve. And Iga right now ranks fourth amongst top 50 players on the WTA Tour in second serve win percentage. So it's not as though it's an easy thing to do. But for Iga at the Australian Open, she struggled on the second serve. And you look at that match against Danielle Collins in particular. I mean, she won 14% of her second serve points, was under 37% in three consecutive matches in Australia on that second serve. Now, her kick serve is that much more effective, certainly on the high bouncing clay courts. But Collins has the mentality and the skill set to punish a hanging second serve and, you know, take advantage of those opportunities, get Iga on her back foot. Mm-hmm. Now, Iga slides so well and moves so comfortably in and out of the outer thirds of the court on clay, and her sliding backhand, again, might be the best shot right now in women's tennis. You have to play perfect. There's no denying that. But Danielle Collins' perfect would be good enough, as we've seen, to beat an Iga Swiatek. Maybe not on her best day, but on a 90% day, I think Collins' best is good enough. And that's why I think she has to be in this conversation. To your point, she's won about 70% of her matches on clay. She has, you know, made the quarterfinals of the French Open before. And the big thing here is she gets a day off in between matches. And that's massive for Danielle Collins, given her health issues right now. And I think that that factor in a WTA draw where no one is playing particularly well outside of Iga, give me the player who has the intangible confidence and then has that extra day off to get fit.
Yeah, and something, another example of a power player at the Australian Open was against Kaia Kanepi, Swiatek. That was 6-3 in the third, but she had to win a tight tiebreak. She only won 37% of her second serves in that match. As you stated, the formula is there, but it's really hard to pull off. So I don't see it, but would I be surprised? I would be surprised if Collins won, but I wouldn't be stunned. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, of course, I would be surprised if anyone beats Iga Swiatek, and it's a degree, I suppose, of stunnage at this point. That said, I mean, again, if anyone's going to do it, we've seen Collins do it before. She does have the tenacity to continue to keep swinging, even when Iga is in one of her seemingly ungodly modes. I'm interested in that Collins match. The other one who I think has to be on the top of the list is Amanda Anisimova, who obviously just beat Danielle Collins 2-2 in Rome. And, you know, by every metric, Amanda Anisimova, also one of the six players who ranked top 20 in both hold and break percentage this season. She's 12th in terms of total points accumulated, fifth right now in terms of yearly ELO rating, 20-8 overall. And you look for Anisimova, who, of course, has won a title in her career on clay, made a semifinal at the Roland Garros back in 2019. Who have the losses been to her, for her? You know, she loses to Sabalenka, she loses to Jabeur, she loses to Barty in Australia after already beating Osaka and Bencic. You know, she's also beaten Sabalenka a couple times this year, beaten a Bencic, beaten a Collins, beaten a Vika. She's the sort of player who, again, she plays on her terms. She swings through everyone. And you have to be able to do that against Iga. Her backhand, I think, is well suited to match up against the Iga kick serve. Again, we're asking players to do the impossible. But Anisimova is one of those players, an eventual Serena Williams Power Tennis Country Club inductee, who just has the gear, it feels like, to potentially knock off an Iga.
Oh, yeah. And something that I really am impressed is how she absorbs power and how she doesn't get pushed back behind the baseline. Mm-hmm. She stands right on that baseline. And that's partially why I think a player like Sabalenka has had so much trouble. I believe until this recent, very recently, Anisimova was 4-0 against Sabalenka, now 4-1. But like you said, the results are great. Collins, Bencic, Azarenka, Sabalenka. She's beaten, you know, when she's beaten some non-power players, like she beat Putintseva, Petra Martic. They're both good on clay. And then on hard, you know, she beat Naomi Osaka in hard courts this year. She is under the radar playing top 10 tennis this season. And even in Madrid, when she lost to Alexandrova, Alexandrova was peaking that tournament. She was playing incredibly well. So I am, for me, Anisimova is the player I think that can beat Swiatek at the French. Her or Jabeur was, I think, someone asked on Twitter. Those are the two I gave.
No, I mean, the power, I mean, Anisimova's backhand is just a slingshot of power. And I don't love her forehand. I do love her ability to hit that inside-out forehand because it just puts you in such an uncomfortable position on the clay courts in particular. And if she has any open space, she has the power to make you pay. This is a weird take. Is she a better mover on clay courts than hard courts? I think the answer is yes. Because she's not the best mover on either. But I think she's a little, like, I think she's a little more fluid on the clay because she just has a little more time.
I think it's, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's close, but I would give the slight edge to clay.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, again, all of the, I think Anisimova has that sort of power tennis in particular that makes her so appealing. With that said, the most consistent American of the season, the one who leads Americans in terms of points accumulated on the year, and she's fifth right now overall in the WTA race, 17-11 overall on the season, is Jessica Pegula, who, of course, will be seated at this event. And you look for Jessica Pegula, she'll be the number 11 seed here, if not higher, depending on if anyone else pulls out of the draw. I mean, Jess Pegula has been exceptional throughout the course of this year. I mean, not exceptional, but she's been the epitome of good throughout the course of this season. You look for her 37-22 in her last 52 weeks. Again, 17-11 in tour play, 19-11 overall. She's, you know, you look at who the losses are to. Yeah, there was a bad loss to Vandeweghe in Charleston, and you don't love the Billie Jean King Cup loss to Yastremska, Indian Wells, Buzkova, certainly. But outside of that, in the big events, you know, Madrid final, she loses to Jabeur. Rome round of 16, knocked out by Sabalenka. Doha, knocked out by Sakkari. Dubai, knocked out by Jabeur. Australian Open, quarterfinalist, she beat Sakkari before getting knocked out by Barty. She's one of those players you feel most confident about her holding seed, right? And you pencil in, her in
that
to that round
in
of
Miami.
16. Yeah, and like by virtue of getting to the round of 16, particularly given where the rest of the field is at, you're just in the ball game. And so like, you know, why the Anisimova case is so interesting is because I think if Anisimova plays Bedosa in the third round, as their seeding indicates they might, like I think the tennis world at large is going to pick Anisimova in that match. Pegula is so interesting is like like who are you picking against her that's seated below her? That's the tough thing for Pegula is she has been as consistent as anyone in women's tennis this year.
I don't love her game on clay. And I know she made the final Madrid. Madrid is higher altitude, faster.
Yeah.
She does have a 60% career winning percentage on clay, and she's not going to give you the match. And that's what I remember in Madrid, she played Cerebus Tormo, and her patience in that match, she just waited and waited until Cerebus Tormo gave her a short ball that she could just attack. And she hit it with such accuracy right where she wanted, deep in the court. Her consistent depth is fantastic. She doesn't spray a lot of unforced errors. Like you said, it's hard to pick against her because she doesn't have a ton of weaknesses. And she's not going to give you anything away. Like, you know, Georgie, it's kind of funny. Georgie was a point away from beating her in the first round, but she mentally so tough as well. She's hung in that match until Georgie's level dropped, and she eventually took it in a very tight third set. But like we said with Swiatek on a lower level, there's just not that many weaknesses that I see that players can exploit. Where would you project her, like without seeing the draw, what would you say is a good result for her? Where would you have her landing?
Hold seed, round of 16. That's what it's got to be for Pegula. And I think that's both the ceiling, you know, the floor, the ceiling's like quarterfinals. It's a pretty one round standard deviation here because that's how consistent Pegula has been. And look, last year, Jessica Pegula put together one of the all time return seasons, was right around 50%, which obviously was a career high for her and was number one in return percentage for the majority, if not the duration of the season. Now you look for her this year via return percentage right now. Certainly that number has dipped a bit for her. Jessica Pegula currently, let's see, right now via hold percentage. Yeah, she's come back to earth. She's at 36.4%, which is 22nd. The big thing for her is her improvements as a server. Jessica Pegula up to a new career high here this year in terms of hold percentage. She's holding serve right around, you know, 72-73% of the time. I mean, again, that's a significant improvement here for Jessica Pegula moving forward, and it's going to be fascinating to see how that serve translates here at the French Open on a surface where, I agree with you, I don't think her line drive based game is particularly effective on these clay courts. That said, she just puts so many returns in play and is so relentless and very rarely beats herself. I think anything worse than third round is not a disaster, but a significant disappointment. Round of 16, you met the expectations. Anything, you know, second week's the goal. Anything in the second week is gravy.
Yeah. A lot of it comes down to where is she in the draw, who's around. But I agree. Round of 16 quarterfinals, I can't see her going any further, but I wouldn't expect her to go out before then either.
Well, with that in mind, let's look through some of the other Americans who have obviously had some success or various degrees this year. Madison Keys, who plays the sort of power variants of Danielle Collins, of Amanda Anisimova. Now, obviously, she hasn't had the success of those two on clay here throughout the course of the season and has struggled a bit since her thunderous start to the year in Miami. But Keys still 15-9 overall. She's obviously had success in Paris before. You look for Madison Keys. I know it was a couple of years ago, but you go back, what was it, I believe 2017 for Keys, where she reached 2018, excuse me, where she reached the quarterfinals of this event, reached the semifinals of this event, quarterfinals in 2019 as well. You know, last year, third round loss for her to Victoria Azarenka, but she's going to be seeded this year. You know, doesn't come in the best of form, first round losses in Madrid and Rome, but, you know, three set loss to Sakkari in Rome. I don't think there's, or in Madrid, excuse me, I don't think there's any altitude, shame in though. That. And, you know, Kalnina in Rome, a 4-4 loss. Kalnina,
I watched that. She was not good.
Yeah, but Kalnina, again, puts the sort of pressure. Well, that is a match. Keys should just have so many opportunities to dictate in. But still, Maddie Keys is a big tournament performer. And
that is true.
I do think she can absolutely make a second week run here. Because again, who in the field is playing definitively better than her?
I don't know, Alex. Okay, so she said she's 15-9. She's 4-8 since the Australian Open quarterfinals. She's 1-3 on clay. Her only win was against Ulrike Icarie, excuse me for the pronunciation, which Icarie is a
true, but her three losses were Bencic, who won Charleston.
That's true.
Sakkari, who, you know, probably should have made the final in Madrid. And Kalnina, who,
you're
that's
right.
The bad
that's
one. Kalnina's the bad
true.
One.
And then, yes, in Indian Wells, she lost to Swiatek. Kalnina again in Miami. I do see what you're saying, but you know, watching her, she's just been so erratic from the baseline. And it's just, yes, you know, that's the thing about Keys is at the Australian Open, she caught fire. She was not making those horrible unforced errors that she sometimes makes. She was had that controlled aggression that she was pounding the serves, hitting huge ground strokes, and they were all going in. But do we rely on that on her worst surface? You know, are we, I can see a very early exit. It, again, depends on the draw, but she's just been, she just has had no control over her ground stroke. She hasn't been, she does, she's not being patient enough out there. She did look like a little more patient against Kalnina in this most recent match, but still, with as many unforced errors as she's hitting, I just don't trust her at the moment.
She has always been a player who, if she gets to the second week, she becomes that much more dangerous, but she's got to get to the second week first. And, you know, again, she hasn't. You know, she has not been consistent since Australia. You're absolutely right in on that note. And so, no, I mean, again, I think if she gets to the second week, everyone's afraid. Can she get there? That's certainly the question for all of us to monitor. Now, again, moving beyond that, let's look at some of the other Americans. We've had the Coco Gauff debate a million times with you on this show here, David. We can do.
Are you starting to see the light?
I don't know about see the light. I think that might be a bit hyperbolic.
I guess maybe a little bit, but she's not progressing very fast though. As fast as maybe expectations.
No, I mean, look, she's 14-10 overall on the season. Now, again, who are those 10 losses to? Sakkari, Halep twice. Sakkari twice, Halep twice, Swiatek, Keys in Australia, Chung Wong, who's been playing really well this season, you know, and Jessica Pegula in Dubai. Like, there's not a bad loss on her resume,
yeah,
but there's also not a good win. Like, I agree with you. She has just been fine this year, holding steady, and she's number 18 in the world right now, has quarterfinal points to defend. I mean, this is a massive moment for Coco Gauff, and she has been sort of the byproduct. We talk about those loaded draws on the WTA Tour. It's just been tough draws for her week in, week out. Now, if you want to make that next jump, there's no excuses. You got to win some of those matches. I get that. But she could also find herself in the third, fourth round by beating some of the lower-ranked players that, quite frankly, she just hasn't had the opportunity to play this season.
Absolutely. Her backhand is still really good.
Yeah. She can, and the serve has gotten better.
Yeah, the forehand is not progressed. That's just my opinion. I mean, it's not me. I mean, it couldn't get much worse than it used to be. But, I mean, it hasn't – it's still mediocre. It's still not, you know – it's still – it hasn't improved that much since when she beat Venus in Wimbledon 2-3 years ago. And based on the hype I was seeing on Twitter, I would have assumed that by now she would be top five in the world. But, you know, I see what you're saying too. I think she's still 18 in the world. I mean, at 18 years old, that is still very impressive. I can't argue with that. Her game works well on clay. I think that it honestly, even though she had her initial breakthrough on grass, I actually think grass might be her weakest surface. But it's hard. I think, again, same thing as Pegula. Maybe, you know, third to quarterfinals where she'll end up, and she'll lose to a player like Sakkari, and that will be that, and we won't think much of her after the tournament.
Yeah, fair. I mean, I think it depends who the draw is. Like, again, if she draws a Bedosa, who doesn't come in with particularly good form, or a Muguruza or a Raducanu, which would be fascinating from a storyline perspective, like, there's no reason she can't beat any of those players, even Anett Kontaveit, yeah, who doesn't come in with particularly good form, or Krejcikova. She's absolutely in the mix with everyone else. She just doesn't have that signature victory here this season. Obviously, serious points to defend, so she is someone to watch. Again, statistically for Gauff, I don't want to say she's plateaued here this season, because she hasn't, but, you know, again, you look for Coco Gauff thus far on the year. I mentioned the 14-10 record. Hold percentage 67.1, below her career average. Break percentage 36.5, above her career average. Both of those numbers about 2.5% difference from those career numbers. It's been up and down for Coco throughout the course of this year, so certainly this presents a massive opportunity for her. Quickly, we're going to rapid fire through the rest of the American women. David, I just want you to know, you can just say yes or no. Are they going to get past the second round? Allie Risk?
No.
Shelby Rogers?
Definitely no.
Madison Brangle?
I got to just say this. I love Madison Brangle's game. I love how she is super consistent, and I love how no flair. That's kind of how I play. So I kind of see myself in her, but no.
Interesting. Rogers, by the way, is always a wild card. Sloane Stephens?
Did you see her in Rabat?
So that's a no?
Horrendous.
Yeah. Ann Lee?
Ann Lee. I love Ann Lee. But I don't think clay is her surface. So no.
Claire Liu?
Claire Liu's playing really well. I think if out of everyone you just named in the rapid fire, she has the best, not the best chance, but I'm going to say yes for Claire Liu.
I agree. If the draw breaks, interestingly, clay has always been a good surface for her. I like, again, how heavy she hits the ball in the quarterfinals this week in Rabat.
And
I agree.
She made the final last week.
Yeah, so she is absolutely a player you keep your eye on. All right, with that in mind, let's move over now to the men's side of the equation. And again, It's a big week for the American men. Big tournament for them. Certainly, you look with some of the withdrawals we've seen on the men's side. I believe it is going to be 7 Americans seeded at this event. And certainly, you know, none of them in the top 10. Only Fritz, Opelka, top 20 seeds. But Isner, Tiafoe, Korda, Paul, Brooksby, all going to sneak in as top 32 seeds. Those 7 Americans.
I can't believe Brooksby's a seed. That's
I mean,
like
again, it's fun. Yeah, it's his, what, like second grand. You know, last year he loses in qualifying. This year he's seeded at the French Open. And then, by the way, he's got a lot of points to start defending after this French Open. So this is really the last free ride for Jensen Brooksby. But, I mean, 7 American men seeded in this event. Here's my question to you, David. Do any of them make the second week? And if so, who are you picking?
Oh, man, if I knew Taylor Fritz was healthy, I would I think actually, even though he only has a 55% winning percentage in his career on clay, I still love the high bounce is really important. He does really well at the high bounces, and I would love to pick him to the second week, but I just can't because I don't know if he's healthy.
Yeah.
And I mean, Opelka, he's been doing well this week, or he beat O'Connell today, you know, in Rome, he lost to Wawrinka. He lost in the first round of Madrid to Korda. So I don't think, I just don't see it with Opelka on, even though the kick serve works so well on clay. Isner maybe in doubles. He's a double specialist now. Tiafoe, I don't see it. Korda is, okay. Korda, I can see. I don't trust him mentally.
This is so fun for me to watch you listen or like see all these names and just go through it in your head. This has been delightful for me, by the way.
Korda, I just, what do you think about Korda? I mean, because there's times like when he beat Alcaraz in, was it Monte Carlo? Mm-hmm. That you think that he is, you know, he could make the second week, and he has, I believe. Didn't he make he lost to Nadal in the round of 16 a few years ago. But then, you know, in Rome, he loses 4-1 to Boddick. So, and then in Madrid, where in altitude, he really should be beating Lorenzo Musetti, he loses in straight sets. So it's like, what version of Korda are we going to get every week?
Yeah, it's a good question to ask. So Korda would be the guy for me, David. I think you have to circle because Korda's a guy who's made a second week in Paris before. Now you look for Sebastian Korda. You're right. There has been variance in what we see week in, week out. And right now, Sebastian Korda, according to the yearly tennis abstract rankings, 36th overall with his 14-10 record. Here's the thing. The highs have been particularly high, and he does have the signature victory over an FAA, over an Alcaraz, over a Van de Sandschulp on the clay courts. Again, he's been in the second week of Roland Garros before and, you know, played pretty well during the Sunshine Swing. I mean, again, probably you play that Nadal match, you know, 10 times. Does he win one or two of them? I think he does. And to lose to an informed Kecmanovic in Miami 6-3, where he had his opportunities in the first set, I don't think that's a bad loss either. Taberner's a clay court.
Kecmanovic is so good.
No, and look, the Taberner loss in Barcelona, you don't love, but Taberner's a clay court specialist. You know,
I don't know. I can't. It was 3-0, though.
No, I agree. You don't love it. It was also the week after Monte Carlo, which certainly a physical week for Sebastian Korda. He's not playing the week before as he did at last year's French Open. Doesn't have many points to defend, given he lost first round last year. This is a big opportunity for Sebastian Korda. And again, let's say, because he's going to be 27, 28 seed, if Medvedev's his seed, like, don't you love that matchup? Aren't you picking Korda in that one? Or, you know, again, if it's an unhealthy Nadal, another shot at him, I'm not saying he's going to win that match, but boy, would that be fun. And just, you know, again, he's got the size, he's got the weapons. Does he have the physicality to do it 7 matches in a row? No, not yet. But can he do it 3 matches in a row? I do think Sebastian Korda is capable of that. And again, it depends who's his high seed. But even if it's a Rublev or a Ruud or, you know, someone along those lines, I think Korda can beat him straight up on his best day. And that's why I think he's the guy right now. Because you're right, Fritz isn't healthy. Opelka, I don't know what to think. Tiafoe would be my second pick in this category because, again, in 3 out of 5 sets, just give me Tiafoe. Just give me that player, his physicality over the majority of the field. I would go Korda 1, Tiafoe 2, healthy Fritz 3, Isner 4, Opelka 5 in terms
what
of
about
confidence
Tommy Wall?
Rankings. And, oh, Tommy 6. No, Tommy ahead of Opelka. Tommy ahead of Isner. So Tommy 5, Isner 6, Opelka 7. Tommy 4, Isner 5, Opelka 6, Brooksby 7.
Okay, let me see. Okay, I'll go Fritz 1. I'm going to go Korda. Oh, man. Do I go Fritz? I'm going to go Fritz 1. I'm sticking with my gut.
I like
Fritz
it.
Fritz 1, Korda 2.
And my concern with Fritz, for the record, is just a health thing. Because,
okay, so
again,
okay,
we just
so
haven't
saying,
seen much of him since Monte Carlo.
So we're saying injured. We don't know his health. Okay. In that
That's,
case,
but keeping that context in mind, yes. Okay. Is he go, so, knowing what we know?
Korda 1, Fritz 2.
Okay.
I guess I, you know, Francis Tiafoe can also get a crowd going, which is, you know, kind of will you over the line.
I love Francis. I think he's the most beloved player right now that's not a big three member or Alcaraz on the ATP Tour. I think his approval rating and his ability, as you mentioned, to engage crowds, it's just better than everyone else's. And yeah, he lost to Garin and Krajinovic in Madrid and Rome. Made the final run in Estoril. Really good win over Davidovich Fokina. Good win over Korda as well. You know, again, I just think 3 out of 5 sets, it's the physicality. Let's look for Francis Tiafoe at the slams, not only over the last 52 weeks, but, you know, for me, I always like to look since, you know, the pandemic era of ATP tennis started, because that's really the gauge we have for this next generation. Now, it's been their world for, in that sense that they've had all the playing opportunities since that time. You look for Francis Tiafoe at the Grand Slams. He's 10-7 overall in slams. Now, he does have 2 first-round losses in Roland Garros. And we all remember last year's up 2 sets to love. Should not have ever lost that match to Steve Johnson. Also loses first round 5 sets in 2020 to Jan Lennard Struff. 2 5-set losses for him in Roland Garros. Outside of that, he's won all of his first matches in Grand Slams. And this is the first time since the pandemic started that he's going to be seated at a Grand Slam as well. I think he's a shoo-in to get to the second round. I think he holds
a shoo-in.
Yeah, I think he wins his first round match.
I don't. There's some potential qualifiers that
I'll take my chances with Francis.
Okay.
I think he's going to get to the third round. I think he's going to hold seed, because I just think, again, this is a big opportunity for him to pick up some points going into this summer stretch and going into a stretch where he may has third round points Wimbledon, fourth round points U.S. Open. Again, the free ride's about to end for Francis, and if he wants to sustain his top 30 ranking, this is a big opportunity for him. I think he will sense that, and I think we're going to see primetime Francis deliver. That's why, to me, he's got to be number 2 on my list, because I don't know about Fritz, but I think he has to be top 3.
Okay, yeah, and I think I had him at 3, right?
Yeah, you did, but that would be my strong case for him.
Yes, I can't argue with anything you said. I feel like we're back to old times, but I agree.
Good. Yeah, I've missed you. This is nice. No, here's my thing. If you agree, then it means I made a good argument. That's the fundamental thing. All right, 4. I mean, 4 on. Tommy's playing so poorly, but like his upside's as high as any
that
of them.
That forehand is, I can't, it's built for clay.
Yeah,
and not last he got a set off Medvedev last year, right? He at least got the tiebreak. I think he got a set.
No, you're not wrong.
He was right in that match. I'm going to put him at 4. I'll put Opelka at 5. I'll put Isner at 6, and I'm going to just drop Jensen Brooksby down. I'm going to put Marcos Giron at 7.
Interesting. I like that. So, I mean, are you ready to move beyond these top 7 guys? You have any final thoughts? Isner, Opelka, like, again, do
Brooksby's
they hold seed, or do you think they get upset?
Brooksby's game is not built for clay, I don't think. I think he needs that extra pop that, like, a hard court and, or, you know, even, like, his variety on grass court is going to be really good. You asked about Isner. Isner's getting older. He's more focused on doubles. You know I love John Isner. But
of course.
I also want to be objective here, and I don't. You know, again, the kick serve works really well on clay, and he's had a lot of double. He's really good at the net. But I mean, I just don't see it. He beat the serve's going to keep him in matches for sure, but I don't see him going deep at the friend. I don't ever see him going deep in singles at a major anymore.
Yeah. I mean, look, I know that's a tough thing to say out loud, but it's not unfair. it's not unfair to say. And, you know, again, I think for him, second round, third round, like that's probably a success, right, at that point for Isner. And so
in singles, yes.
Yeah, in singles. And so it's going to be fascinating to see how he go, you know, again, how he performs throughout the course of the event. What's a win for Brooksby?
Second round. Or yeah. A win is third round, but I think realistically the expectation should be second round.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, I do think that is probably the expectations for him. Now, you know, again, Opelka, he's been all over the place here in this clay court
season.
Did you
see the tennis drama video with him on YouTube? You know, the tennis, he was in the latest one. I don't know where he mentally is in and out of
matches.
Well,
just again, for him to win Houston, then go first round loss to Oda, first round loss to Korda, first round loss to Wawrinka, it's just tough. And then obviously I think for him to play Geneva this week, that was such a, so I think for him, he's one of those players who this week actually matters. And like he beats O'Connell. If he beats Griekspoor tomorrow, now we're talking, okay, I could see him making a holding seed and getting to the third round. Because that would mean now he has confidence, and now he's serving well going into Paris. And I just do think 3 out of 5 sets is really hard to deal with that serve. But I need to see another win for him in Geneva before I think he holds serve.
Especially these qualifiers, like if he gets like a qualifier who doesn't see that type of serve day in, day out, it's going to be brutal. And but again... Yeah. I totally agree with you. This week is very important. I want to see a win against Griekspoor tomorrow. If he loses to Griekspoor tomorrow, I'm going to say second round maybe is where he'll end up at the French. Again, it depends on the draw, but he's not serving that as, you know, Wawrinka with he chipped the serve. Wawrinka did a big, great job in Rome of chipping that, I'm totally blanking on the chip
the block
return.
The block return.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Of blocking that return back. And it kind of created like a formula. You know, it showed the formula to get it back in play. But I want to see the draw before, and I want to see how he does this week. Yeah, I know I'm kind of random.
No, completely fair. Well, with that in mind, I'm going to change the parameters. We played, you know, second round or further. I'm just going to tell me what's a win, what's a loss in terms of how far they reach. Marcos Giron.
A win is second round. A loss is first round.
Disagree. I'm going to say wins third round.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I think he made third round last year, if memory serves me correct. It's either second or third round for him last year. But I'm going to say wins third round. I agree.
Overpowered on clay.
Yeah. But the thing is, he has that much more time, and his forehand is so heavy. Like, it can, it just rips through some of these clay courts. Mackey,
I know he's had some personal issues. A win would be if he, again, I think a win for him is third round.
I think that's a serious, I agree. I think second round for him. See, that's the one to me. Just get a win. Yeah, be top 64.
Let's switch it. So second round for Mackey and third round for Mark.
Yeah, we just had we're sticking with a UCLA Bruin theme here because the next highest ranked American is a third consecutive Bruin here. Maxime Cressy, 62 in the world. For second round's a win for him, right?
He's probably already smelling the grass of Wimbledon if it's played.
I agree with you. Nakashima?
Second, getting a couple sets.
Yeah, second round, I think, for sure. Yeah. Kudla? Sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, because
Brandon right now, 20 years old, 73 in the world. You look at what Nakashima, because we haven't had a Nakashima conversation on this podcast in a while, so we can, this is a good place for us to wrap things up. Now we're back in our groove. Qualifies for Rome, first round loss to Dimitrov, but does qualify there. You know, loses first round Benoit Paire Madrid, Masters qualifying. First round loss to Botic, 6-3 in Munich. Gets a win in Barcelona before getting knocked out 3-2 by Casper Ruud. I mean, 3-3 overall in terms of matches played here during the clay court season. Obviously, we haven't seen the biggest clay court result from him, but context being key, only the pair loss, which was a 3-set loss, is the, you know, again, that's the only one you're like, oh, you have to win that one at this point of his career. He hasn't been bad. Like, and for if he doesn't draw a seed, this is where a Brandon Nakashima has to get a win, right, to make that next jump.
Sure, he lost in the first round of Rome, but in qualifying, he was good. He beat Madjerzak, who is a really underrated.
Which is why I might even put him in that third round category, because like if he doesn't have a seed in his first two matches, you need to win those two matches now if you're Brandon.
Well, for me, it's like, I don't think necessarily his game is well tailored to, I think it's tailored to maybe grass and hard courts more. It's flatter. It is not, he doesn't have those heavy ground strokes that are so important on clay, but he hits his spots on serve. He gets the ball. He hits his spots really everywhere. And I think that while maybe he's not making the headlines he once made, I think he's one of those under the radar guys that we could see sneak into a third round. And then it's like, whoa, what are you doing here? But then you look and he's got two impressive wins in the first two rounds. So I think that honestly, third round for him, I agree with you.
Yeah. All right. Well yes, said. I agree. Well, last few here. Kudla.
Kudla is also someone who's already smelling the grass. Second round.
Stevie J.
Stevie J is another one that I think.
See, I think he's third round. Physicality, okay. 3 out of 5 sets, how heavy his forehand is. He should have success on clay courts. I kind of like how, again, that topspin forehand ripping through a clay court. I want to see a third round from him.
He looked pretty good in Sarasota.
Yeah, I agree.
Backhand, though, he can manipulate it well. The slice is good, but you get someone with a heavy forehand to that back, cross court to that backhand. Yeah. I don't know. The third round, I think, is fair because, like you said, he did beat Francis Tiafoe last year in 5 sets. And I think that, the serve can keep him in sets and then, win a couple tie breaks.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Well, with all of that said, again, those are your breakdown for the Americans heading into the 2022 French Open. Now, if you want to hear more about the contenders, the dark horses, tune in to our earlier episodes this week on the Mini Break Podcast. We covered all of the angles with a plethora of fun guests. Of course, you can find all of those here on this feed or on our website, crackedrackets.com. For the college tennis coverage, Great Shot Podcast feed is the place for
all of
the listeners.
How about Michigan, huh?
Yeah. Oh, don't even get me. Yeah. I'm excited, David. Let's just say that. I am very, very excited for that quarterfinal match on Thursday. And, of course, that action available on the Tennis One app. But, of course, all of the coverage available via our website, crackedrackets.com. Like, rate, subscribe, review to all of the shows. A shout-out, as always, to super producer Daniel Westhoff for the of any job he does day in, day out, making all this content possible. Shout-out to our friends at Tennis Point as well, tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15. Before we sign off, David, any final thoughts?
I just thanks again for having me, and I am so excited about it starts on a Sunday too, which is the French Open starts on a Sunday, and I've been enjoying the. Have you been watching any? I know you're so busy. Have you watched any of the qualies this week? It's been really fun qualifying.
Oh, I am yes. You think Nuno's a match away from his first Grand Slam main draw, and I'm not aware of it, David. I've been following it all again. Busy
tough
time
one, though, against Piros. Piros is one of those guys that we can talk about it another time, but he is. He beat Gerasimov. He is an under-the-radar guy that's rising quickly.
All right. I may text you later in the week for us to do a qualifying recap podcast because there's definitely meat on that bone. But with all that said, I appreciate that, David. And for the fantastic David Gertler, our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, our friends at Tennis Point, from all of us here at both Crack Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. David, what do we tell the people?
That's the break.
And we will see you all tomorrow. Thank you, as always, my friend.
Thank you.